Okay, I am set. Would you like me to do roll call?
Yeah, could you? I mean, 1:22 and we're out of executive session. We're back into general session.
Okay. And Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Popeo?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Ms. Gallen?
Here.
Dr. Campbell? Dr. Campbell? Dr. Spatt is recused and Dr. Rubin is absent.
Do you want to give Campbell one more minute to join, or do you want, we can, let's go ahead and give him another moment.
Dr. Campbell? No.
We also want to make sure that Dr.
Yes. Stop.
Dr. Campbell, are you back with us?
Dr. Porter, are you with us?
I am.
Mr. McDonald, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Dr. Campbell, are you with us? Still with us.
Gail, I know you're downstairs. Do you happen to have his number?
I do not.
Okay. I don't have it either, so I'm going to try to get a hold of him.
This looks as bad. I just packed him.
Thank you. Mr. Larson, Ms. Anthony, do you want to roll without him and let him join us, or do you want to hold?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I mean, he has participated in the discussion up to this point, and he was in the executive session, and he's sort of been a part of this, and I don't want to have to lose him for the final. But of course, it's up to the board. I think someone might have just joined.
Dr. Campbell, is that you?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Okay, so we're moving in, and we've got the quorum at 1:26, and we were working on, prior to executive session, we were working on a consent agreement. So we'll need to get that rolling. I made the motion, and let me make it again, and then I'll need someone to make seconds, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. Do you want to rescind your original motion and start a new one?
Yes, sir. Okay, so I would rescind my previous, and I'll make a new motion. And the new motion is going to be based on the facts, findings, and conclusions per law, per the, investigative report, and that would be ARS 32-150131, which would encompass B as in boy, P as in Paul, R as in Rick, S as in Sam, P as in tab, V as in Victor, and double V as Victor Victor. And my motion would also include, and I believe it's there, but that would include out-of-scope prescriptive practices. And I'll add that allow board staff and AG office to help draft and conclude. So I'll need feedback from the board members.
Dr. Sablik, this is Karen Tibbett. Did you want to include guidance for disciplinary action?
We could put some loose language in there. That would be helpful. Thank you. Dr. Papil, do you have any language you'd like to just add to that, perhaps, and allow board staff and Mr. Larson to draft?
My thought would be, I guess, this is general stuff on my head. My thought would be a year's worth of probation, 6 months worth of restriction on C2s and certain C3s, which we can delineate. And I guess I would say maybe another 5 hours of CEUs on prescribing of controlled substances.
Dr. Campbell, your thoughts on the motion? Consent agreement. You still there? I think we may have lost him again. Ms. Tibbett, your thoughts on the consent agreement?
So it was 1 year probation, 6 months prescribing limitation, is that right? Restriction?
Yes, I believe that's what Dr. Gabriel said. And you also had CME attached to that?
Yeah, 5 hours on prescribing for related to controlled substances.
Okay. So 5 hours of pharmacology?
Exactly, correct.
And that would be in addition to the normal, right?
And you want that additional to is 30, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And
this is Dr. Campbell, I'm back now. Okay. Yes, I had phone issues there. I do apologize.
So we're in the middle. We've gotten the consent agreement. We're at the tail end. And Ms. Anthony, could you read back some of that so we can get
yes.
Dr. Campbell back up to speed.
Yes, this is Gail Anthony.
Actually, I don't mean to interrupt. I was able to hear, you couldn't hear me. So I was able to hear, just to clarify, I was able to hear everything that took place. I was just not able to speak.
Okay.
There is the medical ethics and professionalism course, I believe it's ME-15 Live, offered by Professional Boundaries, PBI. Would you guys be open to mandating that as part of the continuing medical education required of Dr. Porter.
I'm familiar with what
Dr. Popiel, I would.
I would, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, who was that? Dr. Campbell or Dr. Popiel?
So Dr. Campbell.
I would,
he said. And then Dr. Popiel seconded, or not seconded, but followed up, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. You're
fine. How many hours is that course, Dr. Campbell?
That's Karen.
You know, I believe it. It was 8, but I can't be positive. Perhaps we could look that up.
We could, we could just leave that to board staff, to the 5 CMEs for the pharmacology plus that course, or something that is approved by board staff that's similar.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And then you guys also stated the was it the Category 1 continuing medical education or CME in an intensive in-person course regarding controlled substance prescribing? Was that what you were looking at, or were you looking at something different?
I think, Dr. Campbell, that came under, and Mr. Larson can confirm for me, but I think that's under 3215. In the section B as in Victor. I think it's one of those chapters.
Thank you.
Okay. So do we want to go ahead and get this consent agreement voted on?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin Larson. I just to clarify the motion, because there was a lot of discussion there. The motion is directing staff to draft a consent agreement with findings of fact and conclusions of law consistent with the investigative report, and to include draft language for the order that consistent with the discussion that you just had about different CMEs and probation, and then to continue the formal interview for the board to consider that draft, whether it wants to adopt that draft consent agreement at the next meeting. Is that correct?
Correct. And I believe Dr. Popiel said 1 year, basically probation.
And Mr. Chair, members of the board, I just have one point of clarification. When you, with regard to the findings of fact and conclusions of law, did you just want that to be limited to the investigative report, or also to the testimony that we heard today?
I think taking in the account of Dr. Porter's testimony today, and also Mr. McDonald, taking it all into account would be helpful.
Can the whole transcript be used? This is Karen Tibbetts. Can the whole transcript be used from today, including the questions and answers and all of that, not just the statements that were made?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin. If that's a question for me, yes, that can be used, okay. If that's what the board wishes.
We have the motion. So I'm going to need a second, and then we're going to have to
This is Dr. Popiel. I second the motion.
And Gail, whenever you're ready.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt is recused and Dr. Rubin is absent. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald and Dr. Porter.
Thank you very much for the opportunity of speaking.
Thank you, everyone. Day.
This is Dr. Porter, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's move on to 5D if we could. That'd be case number 20-165. and that would be Dr. Johnson. And this is the initial interview. Is Dr. Johnson on the phone?
Yes.
Okay. Gail, could you, when you have a moment, give us a summation on Dr. Johnson?
Yes.
Well, get up right now. Leave a message by me for you back. If you are a little call, forget it.
Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
And this is Gail Anthony, Dr. Sadlick, members of the board. This is regarding case number 20-165. On August 18th, 2020, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians and Medical Board received a notice from the Arizona Department of Health Services outlining an apparent discrepancy between the number of medical marijuana certifications issued by respondent between January 1st of 2020 and May 31st of 2020, and the number of CSPMP database queries respondent performed during that time frame. According to the DHS notice, respondent certified 73 patients for medical marijuana during that time frame and queried the database zero times. In her response, respondent stated, quote, "I had been under the impression that my employee was checking the pharmacy board. As it turns out, he was not," end quote. Pursuant to ARS 3215-0131-YY, a copy of the CSPMP is required to be kept in the patient file. A subpoena specifying a list of medical marijuana patient names and dates of birth was sent to respondent. Respondent supplied the list on October 2nd, 2020. A subpoena for four patient charts was delivered on January 25th, 2020. Although several attempts were made by board staff in an effort to follow up on the status of the receipt of the records, respondent failed to provide copies of the subpoena documents. After notice of this matter being placed on the agenda was sent to her, board staff did receive one patient record. On August 15th, 2020, the board received a request from respondent for verification of licensure to be sent to the state of Idaho. The fee was submitted via check reflecting a New Hampshire address and mailed from Spokane, Washington with no return address. The portion of the verification completed by respondent reflects a Post Falls, Idaho address. Her response to this board matter lists a Scottsdale address under her signature. However, she further supplied the board with a certificate of completion of marijuana CME, which indicates it was provided by an entity in Washington. On October 2nd, 2020, an email was sent to respondent attempting to confirm her address. However, she failed to respond to that email. An email to Ms. Stark, her attorney, was sent requesting confirmation of her client's address. As of the drafting of the report, it had not been answered. On June 29th, a response was received via respondent's attorney indicating respondent maintains an office in Scottsdale, Arizona, however, is currently residing at her parents' home in New York. In summary, records indicate respondent certified 73 patients for medical marijuana from January through May of 2020. Respondent failed to perform a CSPMP audit report on 73 patients prior to certifying for medical marijuana. Respondent admits she thought her employee was performing those queried, but did not. Knowing those reports were not provided, respondent must have signed off on the certification form attesting she had reviewed the CSPMP audit report when in fact she had not. Respondent failed to provide three of the four medical charts subpoenaed by this board. Respondent failed to supply an answer in a timely manner regarding location. The medical records respondent did supply the board may not meet the standard of adequate medical records and may reflect inadequate medical care for failure to perform physical examinations, including vitals.
Thank you. Dr. Johnson, are you represented by legal counsel?
Yes. Hi, yes, this is Sarah Stark.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yes, S-P-A-R-K?
Okay.
S-P-A-R-K, yes.
Okay, thank you. So, Ms. Stark or Dr. Johnson, can you give us some feedback?
Yes, again, this is Sarah Stark, and I'm counsel for Dr. Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. We did address the matters set forth in the board's investigative report in our written response, but I wanted to again briefly address the allegation of Dr. Johnson's failure to check the CSPMP database prior to certifying patients for medical marijuana. Again, as we previously have stated in the written response, Dr. Johnson acknowledges and admits this mistake. Her employer at the time represented to her that the company had internal procedures for checking the databases for the physicians. They would then notify the prescriber if there were any issues with a particular patient obtaining certification based on the results of the CSPMP query. Dr. Johnson subsequently learned, of course, that this was not being done as was represented to her. We offer this information not as an excuse, but as an explanation. Dr. Johnson takes full responsibility for this oversight and now knows it is her sole responsibility as a licensee to check the CSPMP and not rely on another person or entity to perform this task on her behalf. Dr. Johnson is not currently practicing in the state of Arizona, but should she resume her practice here, she will ensure that she reviews the rules and statutes related to the CSPMP to ensure she has a current and up-to-date understanding of the laws and what is required of her. With regard to the subpoenaed medical records, we did indicate to Ms. Anthony that three of the four sets of records that were subpoenaed were not in Dr. Johnson's possession, control, or care, and they were not able to be obtained. And that is all I have, and Dr. Johnson is here on the line and available for any questions the board members may have for her. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Dr. Johnson, where are you currently practicing
then? I am currently practicing in California.
Okay. Do you hold a California license?
Yes, I do.
And then in reference to the charts that the executive director asked for, were you working for a company and that's why you have access?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So you were working for a company that was holding those charts?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Is that company still in business? Are you aware?
I am not aware if they're still in business, no.
And was there any reason that it took you so long to get back to the executive director?
With respect to...
She had a couple of questions. And I know she was trying to track you down. And you still do hold an Arizona license. Right. Was it just time lapses that happened via mail, email?
If I can briefly respond to that, this is Sarah Stark again. I'm sorry. So one of the issues was that Ms. Anthony said she mailed a subpoena to our office, I believe on January 25th, 2021. We, as a law firm, were not operating in the office at that time because of COVID. We were all working remotely and having our mail forwarded. We did not receive a physical copy of that subpoena and still have not to date received a physical copy of that subpoena. So on May 12, 2021, Ms. Anthony followed up with me via email asking for an update on the subpoena. And I indicated to her that we had not received it at that point. So there was a lapse of about 4 months or so between the time that the subpoena was sent by Ms. Anthony to our office and the time that she reached back out to me by email to inquire about the production of documents.
OK.
And Dr. Johnson, do you still certify patients for a medical campus in Arizona?
No, I don't.
Okay. I'm going to ask the other board members. I'll start. Dr. Spatt, you've rejoined us officially. So let me start with you, and if you could give us your thoughts.
Yeah, just a quick question for the doc. Are you doing any certification in of marijuana in California as well? I know they're recreational, but I'm just curious.
No, we are not able to as naturopaths in California.
Oh, okay. Right. And then when you sign with the, I know the company, I don't know if it still exists, though, but when you sign with them, was it on the contract that they say that they actually do the legwork for you in checking the pharmacy base?
No, it was verbal.
How does it help?
It was verbal.
It was verbal. Oh, I see. Okay. All right. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Campbell, if you don't mind, I'll just move up from my list.
Oh, thank you. Dr. Campbell, thank you. Yes, today, and also to your counsel. Respectively to, well, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the procedure in the past organization that you belong to for the staff to check. Certification, a form,
Dr. Campbell? Excuse me, this is Gail. You're cutting in and out. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes. You were cutting out before.
Oh, my apologies. Yeah, so doctor, for the certifications, the state form that you filled out, along the way, there's a place where you have to initial the PMP had been done, and I, you indicated that staff members, to your knowledge, were completing this document. Now, I believe it was. In all that time, did you ever, anybody from the PMT report to review? Frequently in practices, in that usually there's
Dr. Campbell,
I think you're breaking in and out. I can't hear what you're saying. Sorry.
How about now? Can you?
Yeah, we got you back.
Okay, I apologize, guys. Essentially, doctor, my question was with regard to the 70 people approximately that you had certified. Did at any time did the staff bring you any documentation to alert or rise to any potential issues with any of these patients as far as medications that maybe they were actively taking that were of concern, or were there any notification that maybe a patient who was taking opioids or had any, you know, abuse tendencies or any areas of concern? Usually, I guess what I'm trying to understand here is the thought process. With 70 patients that are being certified, in prior testimony that we've heard from other physicians, along the way, sometimes they'll notice that there is concerning prescriptive history within an applicant's PMP, and they'll have frank conversations with their patient about, you know, what they find there. And so at no time did the staff bring you any documentation or highlight any information that would be concerning, you know, and cause you to have a more frank conversation with your patient. So out of all these 70 people, a light never came on that maybe there was something going on, or did you just think that every one of these 70 people were good to go?
No, they didn't bring any of them to me, but with all of my patients, I would ask them if they have a history of substance abuse, and there were some that were very open and honest about it. So we would have conversations, and I'd ask them what they're doing now and how things are going for them, what they've done, but that was about the extent of it.
Okay. And do you now, you know, realize that when you sign the form, attesting to the fact that you had, the form that you signed did say that you had ran the PMP, right? And so you initialed that. Do you understand the problem with that now?
I absolutely do, yes.
All right. I think that was the only two questions I had, and I apologize for the phone issues there. I'm not sure what's going on with my phone today. And that's all I had, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Ms. Galloway?
Yes.
Questions for Dr. Johnson?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Ms. Tippett?
No questions.
Okay. And Dr. Papillo, I'm moving up to you.
Okay, Dr. Johnson, we have obviously the one patient chart here. I'm just looking through the chart notes, like one of them, it was the 99203 from July 29th of 2015. So essentially you have a history of present illness, no objective findings. And then looking at another one, let's see here, from 10/15, that was another visit that just has what looks to be a plan. And then last one from June of 2016, where you're charting it as a 99214, there is no subjective, there is no objective. What's going on with the chart notes here? Because this is definitely not like a SOAP chart note. Is this a reflection of what you would standardly produce as a chart note, or is this somehow
No, it isn't. And from what we learned from Ms. Anthony is that apparently this is one of my patients from my previous private practice before I had closed it. And I had some of my notes on the EMR and some were typed. So this is what I was able to pull from my type, because I no longer have that EMR system. I stopped paying for everything in 2017 when I closed my practice and my husband passed away.
Gotcha. Okay. So this is kind of a partial chart note. There's other pieces of the chart note that are missing, essentially.
Essentially.
I understand that this isn't probably a patient that you even did medical marijuana on. Just from a standpoint of general chart notes, it's definitely lacking. So I'm just trying to understand that.
No, they're much more in depth. It's just that's what is pulled. That's all we had. Like I said, everything was closed in 2017, and I would chart and then do part of it on the EMR and what we had scanned, I had in storage.
I think that's all my questions today, Dr. Sadler.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Gill. So we need to make a motion on this particular case. And I was thinking of, and I need board feedback, perhaps a letter of concern with, since there was some deficiency with charting, perhaps 8 hours of CME would be where I was kind of thinking, but I'll need other feedback on that. If it's 73, the problem is we got 73 patients. And I understand that, unfortunately, where she was working didn't give her the complete chart, et cetera.
I think, this is Dr. Lopiel, I'd like to see an example of where what she would deem a normal chart note, maybe picked from something that's been done in the last 6 to 12 months, nothing moving forward, but maybe one or two patient files. I mean, we've made a big emphasis on adequate chart notes, et cetera, so I don't want to just say, hey, it is what it is, we didn't pull it up. I'd like to see an actual, you know, small sampling of chart notes as well.
Dr. Johnson, would that be something you'd be able to provide?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, Dr. Field, would you want to hold on her board action until you receive that? Or do you want to do the board action and then request that?
I think the letter of concern is fine. I think, I can't recall if in the past we have, once we decide on a letter of concern, do we have any ability to require those chart notes get submitted? Or do we lose that once we've actually finalized the letter of concern? Or can we tie in the requirement for chart notes into that?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin Larson. I don't believe the board should be continuing its investigation if it's going to take disciplinary or any sort of legal action today. So to your question, I think it should, if you are going to request further information from the doctor, then I would hold off on taking any legal action at this point.
This is Dr. Lopiel. That's fine with me. We can table the case until we have an ability to look at some chart notes. That would be fine with me.
Would you want to table it, Dr. Lopiel, and ask board staff to request additional information? Or would you want to roll with the letter of concern and CME?
My understanding from what was just mentioned by legal counsel was that he was saying that we need to just put this to a side and circle back once we've been able to look at chart notes. Maybe I misunderstood that.
Mr. Larson, could you clarify?
Yeah, I was only saying that, you know, the board can do one or the other. The board, if the board does want to request further information from the doctor in furtherance of the investigation, then it should table and then wait until, you know, a later meeting until that information is reviewed to take legal action. But if the board decides it doesn't want to do that, which I think that's how I heard Dr. Sadlick's question, was he was just asking which route the board wanted to go, either a letter of concern with CME or further investigation. But I was just saying that if you are going to do a further investigation, then you shouldn't take any legal action today.
This is Dr. Lopiel. That would be my thought. Let's just request additional chart notes and finalize the case once we have additional chart notes in hand. That would be my thought.
Board members.
Yeah, this is Dr. Prasad, and I concur with Dr. Pocchio about the request as well.
Okay. So let me quickly run through with Dr. Campbell. Sounds like we have a motion on the table.
I absolutely concur. Would you like me to second that motion?
Sure. That'd be great.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin Larson. I apologize. Can you just clarify who made the motion and what exactly the motion is?
That was Dr. Papil. Dr. Papil, do you want to state then for?
Yeah, I make a motion. We postpone the decision on this case until further meeting for the examination of additional chart notes.
Dr. Campbell.
We got a second from, well, actually, a second from Dr. Spatt. Sounds like Dr. Campbell gave his input.
And Mr. Chair, members of the board, sorry again, this is Justin Larson. You're also directing staff to request further information for the chart notes from the doctor.
Yes, Dr. Papil, that was your thought?
Yes, please. I'd like to see three additional patients' charts reflective of charting that's been done in the last 6 to 12 months.
Okay. And you're aware we'll probably wind up, most likely, unless the board feels different, possibly with a letter of concern with her doing additional CME. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. So Gail, it sounds like we got a motion, and it sounds like we got a second. So can you go ahead and phrase the motion and then go ahead and do roll call?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, I believe Dr. Popio wanted to table the matter for further investigation and requesting staff to request three additional chart notes from respondent. And the chart should have been from 6 to 12 months prior to this date. And this is for chart review. And then I had a second from Dr. Campbell.
And Dr. Spatt too, I believe. Hobby.
And Dr. Sadlick.
I'll go on.
Dr. Popio.
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts.
Aye.
Ms. Gallen.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell.
Aye.
Dr. Spatt.
Aye.
Dr. Rubin is absent. Motion carries.
Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Stark and Dr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and then we'll roll to 5C. That's going to be case number 2182. And that's Dr. Lance Morris. And this was an initial review. And is the complainant on the phone? Okay. In that case, the complainant's on the line. So, Ms. Anthony,
yes,
you're there. Okay. And could you give us your first name?
Gary.
Gary?
With a K.
Okay. Thank you. And
you're welcome.
Sandy, could you give us an overview?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, on April 28th, 2021, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from KS regarding his mother, DW, who had passed away on April 16th, 2021 from metastatic breast cancer. It is alleged DW presented to Dr. Morris on December 1st, 2020, regarding a lump in her breast. According to the complainant, Dr. Morris examined the breast lump and told DW that the lump wasn't connected to anything and it was not cancer. DW, an 85-year-old female, presented to respondent on 12-1-2020 with a complaint of a lump located in her left breast. According to the chart, the last time DW presented to respondent prior to the 12-1-2020 visit was 9/10/2019 with no mention of breast lump in the chart. 12/1/2020 respondent charted DW reported a recent fall and has been seeing Dr. Deal for adjustments. Dr. Deal claims issue is with neck. Respondent further notes, quote, left breast lump. Patient claims saw Dr. Sheldon Deal and he reassured her that the lump was not cancer but lymph swelling, end quote. Under physical exam, respondent notes, quote, left breast palpation mass not attached to wall, free floating. end quote, and notes he instructed the patient to, quote, if any breast changes, color, texture, size, sensation, plan follow-up, end quote. During an interview with the investigator, DW's husband stated that he was not present in the exam room with respondent and DW. However, at some point, respondent came out into the waiting room to get him and brought him back to the examination room. While in the examination room with his wife, respondent told him the lump was not cancer because it was not attached to anything. Respondent states the following in his response, quote, on examination of the left breast lump, I noted that it was not attached to the chest wall and was free-floating. I explained to the patient that this non-attachment was a good sign and that the mass was probably not cancerous. Respondent failed to provide or refer DW with follow-up blood testing, ultrasound, or biopsy regarding the breast lump. According to the records, DW was admitted to Banner Health Hospital on 2/26/21 and transferred to hospice on 3/5/2021 and passed on 4/16/2021.
Dr. Morris, are you on the line?
I am.
Are you with legal counsel or are you solo today?
Oh, I do not. No.
Okay. Can you give us your feedback?
Yeah, so on 12/1/2020, I saw the patient, and our primary concern at that visit was that she had an incident of syncope, and she had a spontaneous fall in the grocery store, and she claimed she did not trip on anything, but she did hit her head. And on a further examination, I determined that she had significant bilateral edema of her both feet, and her blood pressure was elevated, but on standing rapidly demonstrated orthostatic hypotension. Her pulse was extremely erratic, heart dysrhythmia was severe, and that was the focus of the visit based on the triage of that visit. I told the patient that I was very concerned about a severe cardiac condition and that her incident of a fall was probably associated with a cardiac incident. And I referred her to a cardiologist, said that she needed a minimum of an EKG, preferably a stress EKG, follow up with the cardiologist. And that was the focus of the visit, but at the end of the visit, she mentioned this reference about the breast lump and seeing another physician, and I offered to examine it. And finding that it was a small free-floating mass, I did tell the patient that there was a probability that this may not be cancer because most cancers are adherent to the chest wall, but that I said nobody can tell you by palpation that it's not a cancer, and that that she should, if there was any change in color, texture, size, or sensation, that she should absolutely follow up. And I mean, from my training as a medical student and in my career, for a first exposure to a breast lump in a female patient, the standard of care does not require referral for an upgraded assessment. So, I mean, unless that training has changed or the parameters for, triage advice is different, I thought I was focusing on the primary problem, referred her to a cardiologist. The patient did not go to a cardiologist, did not follow up with me. I'm not aware that she followed up with anybody about anything from the fall to the heart situation to the lump situation. The reference in the complainant's statement that I was seeing this patient and did well woman checkups and did her gynecologic care is absolutely untrue. As you can see by the medical records, I have never treated this patient or any gynecological or female health issues at any time. I have never done a pap smear on this patient. The claimant's suggestion that the patient really trusted me, well, if she really trusted me, why wouldn't she go to a cardiologist based on that being my primary concern at that visit? So I don't know that she did trust me. If you look in the record, you'll see that on an average, I see this patient about twice a year over a period of several years, and usually for relatively minor things like allergies or reassessing her thyroid hormone levels. And I said, I've never done female care, and I need clarity from the board on a first contact with a female patient with a breast lump. Are you telling me that the standard of care has changed and that that patient should automatically be referred to a higher level of evaluation? Because from my training in medical school, that's not the case. What I did was completely appropriate to the case, and I did suggest if there were any changes, she needed to follow up appropriately. And it, based on the information that you've shared from the case moving forward, sadly, the patient never followed up for anything, and then sadly died of cancer. I'm deeply sorry for this situation, but I'm not aware that I was not practicing within scope or appropriate recommendation. Please help me understand if I did something wrong.
And is the before we get the complaint, let me, board members, if you don't mind, I'll start. I can start with you, Dr. Campbell, if you're ready, and I can just roll up the list. We lost.
Yes, thank you, Doctor. Thank you for being with us today. Looking back on this case, in addition to your open question regarding standard of care, is there anything that you see now in reflection that you would have done differently?
Well, I need guidance from the board. I mean, my understanding is that in a first patient female contact with a breast lump, that does not automatically mandate that we refer to a higher level for evaluation, that I guided the patient that if there were any changes, if it would have been adherent to the wall, or if I would have felt positive lymph nodes, or there would have been other symptomology, then I would have considered upgrading to a higher recommendation. But at this visit, based on my clinical triage at that visit, the focus and the great concern was this incident of syncope and falling, which I did refer her to a cardiologist, which she refused to go to. If the standard of care has changed, I would like to be informed, because I'm not aware that I should have referred her at that stage of evaluation.
Do you feel any of these?
Should have referred her?
Do you feel, sir, you feel any of this that you
Dr. Campbell, excuse me, this is Gail. You're breaking up again.
Okay. I'm not sure if you can hear me now, but that was all the questions that I had. Thank you.
And let me, if you don't mind, Ms. Gallon, let me roll up to you.
I just don't really have anything to add at the moment.
Ms. Tibbetts.
I don't have any questions.
That was all the questions I had, Dr. Campbell. That's all the questions I had.
Okay. Thank you. And Dr. Popiel, let me roll up. Let me digress here for a moment. Dr. Spatt, your thoughts?
I'm looking at the clinical record on, is that the handwritten note that you have? Dr. Morris?
Yes,
okay.
It is.
Okay. So on it, you said breast lump. So when you, I know noticed that it highlight on here on the charting that I'm looking at. So when you diagnosed with breast lump in that particular case, in this particular case, do you have any suspicion or what's your thought? I just want to see what's your thought at that point, even though you put that breast lump on it. So I just want to know what your thought is.
So as I said, sir, my focus on this visit and my priority was the incident of syncope and falling and hitting her head and then having cardiac dysrhythmia. So my triage was to focus on that issue at that visit and refer her to a cardiologist. When I felt the breast lump, which she did ask me to check, and which she claimed that another physician had told her it absolutely was not cancer, I said, that's nonsense. You cannot make that determination by palpation ever. But because the lump was free-floating, based on my training in medical school, most breast cancers, most of them are adherent to the chest wall. That's not an absolute. It's just a guideline. If the mass had been adherent, if I had felt positive axillary lymph nodes, or if I'd seen other symptomology that would suggest it, I would not have hesitated at that visit to also say, you must go for a follow-up of this breast lump. But because that was not the priority of the visit, and because it seemed reasonable at that staging to suggest that she merely pay attention to any changes in color, texture, or sensation, and that if those changes occurred, then she absolutely needed to follow up. So at that first visit, I did not deem it necessary or even appropriate to make a referral for the breast lump follow-up. Again, if the standard of care has changed from my training in medical school and my career, I would like someone in the board to inform me of that, because as far as I know, what I did was completely appropriate and standard at that level of evaluation.
So after December 1st of 2020, after you examined her, did she come back to you after that, or that was the last time you saw this patient?
That was sadly the last visit I ever had with this patient. I mean, if as the complainant states, she trusted me and relied on me, and she was starting to have massive weight loss and other symptomology, she chose not to come back to me, or for that matter, anyone else that I'm aware of, based on the information you've shared with me.
Okay. I know the patient didn't help you, but did you do a follow-up with her afterward? Let's say a couple. I'm just wondering if you did like make a phone call just to see how she's doing. I'm just curious. Well, what's your method of
when the cardiologist informed me that, you know, because I checked with the cardiologist several times asking, has this patient made an appointment yet? You know, have you called the patient to make them make an appointment? And what they told me is the patient was non-responsive to their calls, and she never called them. And I made a couple of attempts to call her to ask what's up, but I never got through and never got a response. And I felt I had done my due diligence and duty as a physician at that point.
I see. Okay. All right. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Dr. Morris, a couple things that come to play that I need to get clarified. Is she presented to you with two different etiologies, one being cardiac and one being a concern for possible breast issue, correct?
Right. Well, if you look at my notes, what you see is that I identified five issues. One is an increased level of anxiety due to her son's death, having hurt her back from bending over in the freezer, and then having had a fall in the grocery store, which made the back worse, and then the edema in the feet. And then the last item was the breast lump. And as I said, I focused on the most immediate dangerous issue that I felt was existent, and it did examination recommended that she have the indurated area on her back examined more carefully by somebody else, and that I was concerned about the edema and the heart, and she should absolutely do something about that. And then I told her that, you know, the breast at that visit at that time seemed like a low priority, and I thought, just suggesting that if it was changing, again, by my training in medical school, most breast lumps change quite dramatically if it moves into cancer, and that those changes are observable both to the patient and to any physician.
Okay, so the two main etiologies, I understand the back, I understand the rest, but the cardiac issue, which you did deal with, you did give her referral. And then the obvious issue that was present at that exam was the breast. What was your, just so I understand, what was your game plan? What was your thought process? I understand the attachment to the wall. I mean, I may disagree with you on that, but, you know, the other board members can talk about that too. But what was your thought process if that, quote, lump had gotten larger, or were you going to hopefully triage her to Radiology Limited, give her some type of roadmap for that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, my guidance was the changes in color, texture, size, or sensation, follow up with me or somebody else. And since she did not do that, I assumed, and obviously incorrectly, but I assumed that it must have been a non-issue because if she would have come back to me and I would have noticed any differences, then I absolutely would have triaged her to follow up with ultrasound or to some other level of evaluation. I mean, that's obvious. I just, at that visit, I determined that was appropriate or necessary. There was another focus. If she would have come back to me and I'd noticed any changes, I can assure the board that I would have referred her for appropriate follow-up with a specialist.
Let me move to Dr. Popiel. Dr. Popiel, sorry to put you into that, but can you give us your feedback on this?
Yeah, no problem. No problem. No, you've kind of answered one of my questions earlier of what was this patient focused on at their visit? It sounds, obviously they were seeing Dr. Deal. She was seeing Dr. Deal. What was their main focus of coming in to see you if they were still seeing Dr. Deal? Was it for the anxiety? Was it for the back? Or was it just, hey, I just need to check in on everything?
No, she, again, the primary concern was this incident of falling.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I focused. But at the end, as an afterthought, she said, oh, by the way, I have this lump that this other physician has said to me is harmless. And I tested it and said, well, that may be true. I mean, based on my examination, it's likely to be true, but I made it very clear that I could not tell her that it was not cancer. I mean, I don't remember bringing her husband into the room, but if I did bring him into the room and shared this afterthought, It's hopefully it's okay, but with the patient directly, I shared that if there's any changes, you know, you need to follow up.
It looks like a piece of, I guess, notebook paper. Is this the treatment protocol that you gave the patient?
Notebook paper, yes. That when I see patients on notebook paper, it's actually a legal yellow pad. I write out my recommendations usually and hand it to them. And you can see I put in boxes supplements that I recommend from my dispensary with the explanation always to patients that they have no obligation to purchase anything from my dispensary. They can get this anywhere they want, but that these are my recommendations. And
right. So
I don't even remember
protocol. You make the copy, put it in the patient's chart, and the patient gets a copy of this, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I mean, from my perspective, there's looking at what you've done, I think you're generally in the right on this as far as what's the primary thing in office that day. Definitely seemingly is cardiac, and clearly on your treatment protocol, it's written if there are any changes in anything related to the breast lump to follow up. I mean, obviously hindsight's 20/20 that you could have been an ultrasound, but
you feel very bad. I mean, I knew this patient and cared for this woman, and it saddens me that her family feels that I did something wrong to her. I cared for this person a lot, and I'm very sad for their loss. And in hindsight, I guess I would have wished I had said, well, maybe you should have this checked. But the truth is, if she didn't listen to me about going to a cardiologist, I mean, I know this woman very well. She was very headstrong. I don't know if she would have listened to me about following up for anything else either. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, clearly if she's passing out and has, you know, bilateral edema, there would appear to be cardiovascular issues. So from my perspective, I think, yes, you could have done a little more on the breast lump, but however, you dealt with the thing that was most pressing the day of the appointment. So I feel like you did a lot of the right steps, and you also clearly wrote in the treatment protocol if there are any changes, if there's anything of concern, to follow up. So I don't really have any other questions. I think, even though your chart notes kind of are run together, I see what you've done with this. You know, I can follow it. I can follow the logic here. I can follow, you know, your SOAP side of things. They're better than most of what we see, I would say, from the standpoint of chart notes. So that's all my input for now, Dr. Sadler.
Okay. Let me ask any board members before we hear from the complainant if they have anything else to add. I mean, my concern, and then we'll hear from the complainant, is that there were, I understand, multiple issues, and that happens basically with anybody that practices. You might have everything from an earache to a toenail, so you have to kind of triage through it. What I would have liked, and it didn't happen, obviously, is that this is cardiac. We'll go see cardiology. Here's a referral. This breast issue, I have concerns on, and since you're here, those are my two main issues. I'm going to give you a referral to either oncology, or I'll give you a referral for further imaging of that. And on the rest of this MSK, muscle skeletal issues, you can come back and we'll work on those. That's what I would have liked to have seen, but, you know, obviously it didn't happen. So with that being said, let's hear from the complaint. Is it Carrie?
Yes, it's Carrie.
Okay. Carrie, can you give us a little feedback?
Well, I can only tell you what I know. My mom, is her husband present here as well? Robert? Does not appear that Robert's present, but I did talk with my mom after her visit with Dr. Morris, and she had agreed to go to a cardiologist. So that was in the works. The problem was that her health deteriorated pretty rapidly, and I'm trying to find in my notes here. I had some conversations with her. Let me see here. As far as the exact timing on some of this stuff. I'm going to have to scroll back through this because there were a lot of messages and discussions. They're all in Messenger. But her health deteriorated pretty quick after she saw Dr. Morris. So it wasn't like she was not trying to get help. She was, but she ended up going to the hospital many, many times, as well as, you know, emergency rooms and then paramedics. And I mean, it just got, pretty bad, pretty fast. I'm just trying to see here. Yeah, most of this was by video, unfortunately. The cardiologist, I can tell you, here's a dated conversation with her from January 4th, where she was trying to go to Ted Goldfinger, who was a cardiologist. But that stuff just, she was too sick to go within a matter of a week to 10 days. Her swelling continued to get worse and worse in her feet. And what she really needed pretty early on was some diagnostic things done, some radiology of some sort, or an ultrasound. And I think the way it worked out was all of that stuff that was presenting itself, the swelling, the fall, the cardiac issues, that was all related to cancer. The cancer was spreading in her body and not being treated. And by the time she finally ended up getting diagnostic work done, I think that was in March. You probably have those records. She had metastatic breast cancer. It was everywhere. So she was very fond of Dr. Morris. She tried to get me to go to him many, many times, and I'm sure he is a fine naturopathic physician. But this notion to me that he can, you know, try and diagnose a cancer, whether or not something is cancerous by the way it feels, is just bizarre. I don't think I've ever even heard a doctor suggest such a thing. I mean, you know, you can have cancer. My brother had one little speck of cancer on the lining of his lung. Barely could even show up on a PET scan. And that thing spread everywhere in his body. I mean, you couldn't possibly palpate that. You know, cancer is something that's happening at the microscopic level. So, yeah, that's stuff that has to be investigated. And I mean, I don't know how advanced it was when he saw her in December, but this notion that you know there's no need to investigate or get a mammogram or an ultrasound or something, that is, you know, to me, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Any time a woman has a lump, that should be investigated. The only person that's got the qualifications to say whether or not something might be cancer or not is someone who specializes in a field like that. So it'd be an oncologist or a radiologist or a pathologist who does a biopsy. And this bit of putting people's mind at ease because of whether or not something feels like it's attached, I mean, where is the scientific basis for that? Is that really sound medical practice? I don't think so. And so that's why I filed the complaint.
Okay.
Carrie, this is Dr. Popiel. I had a question for you, and I apologize. I'm sorry for the loss of your mother and you having to deal with this. Would you say that you started seeing a decline before December of 2020, like in October, November? Would you say you'd seen any signs of decline or not particularly?
The problem is with the pandemic. So, you know, no, we weren't seeing each other. So I did not, I had seen her when my brother was in hospice. We went up to Sholo. So I saw her the end of July because we wanted to be there for, you know, for when he passed. But she seemed okay to me at that point. So, you know, I think all of this pretty much happened during the fall. Now, some of what I've been told about the type of cancer that she had suggests that it could have been present for a very long time and been a very slow-growing cancer that was fueled by estrogen. So, you know, it probably could have been treated just by blocking by the estrogen had it been diagnosed. But no, I never saw her until after I was vaccinated. I saw her at UMC in March, and the state of her decline from when I had previously seen her was just stunning. I mean, holy moly. I was, you know, breathless by the, you know, what had happened to her physically. Gotcha. So, you know, how long that was going on, I don't know. But as far as what was physically, you know, what presented, and I don't even know what Dr. Morris observed in December, if she looked healthy to him at that point or not. I don't know. But over the...
I got you.
The next...
Well, I guess... My concern was, this, you know, Dr. Morris, and we're obviously dealing with Dr. Morris today. However, there, you know, there was another physician who was a licensed naturopathic doctor who was seeing her weekly or every couple weeks as well. You know, I guess that the question for him is, I was just kind of, you know, looking through his chart notes because he was seeing your mother as well, you know, all the way up until the point where Dr. Morris saw her. So I guess that brings, provides a little concern for me as to what he was seeing and why he wasn't also kind of following up on these things too as a licensed naturopath.
Somewhat news to me. That's all somewhat news to me. I knew she saw Dr. Sheldon Deal. I'd seen Deal myself back in the 70s. But I thought that was mostly for her back and for adjustments. So maybe he was doing some women's health care, and I misunderstood that. That's possible. But I know that she was getting it somewhere, and I was told by her daughter that it was coming from Dr. Morris, but it may well be that it was coming from Dr. Deal. If he does that, I just wasn't aware of it.
Absolutely. I'm just wondering if, you know, if we're seeing a physical decline in your mother, you know, if somebody who was seeing her weekly or every other week or every 3 weeks would be more, you know, should be more apt to follow up on that care and dig into that. Obviously, based on his chart notes, it was more so physical, you know, musculoskeletal care, but he's also commenting on sharp stabbing pains and things like that. So that's all. I just was curious if, you know, when you started seeing any sort of decline. Obviously, you didn't see it really because of COVID.
Didn't see it because of the pandemic.
Gotcha. I don't have any other questions right now, Dr. Spadler.
Okay.
Dr. Spath, do you have further questions?
I'm sorry, you call me?
Do you have any further questions for?
I just want to ask the patient, son. This is just about my condolence to your family on it. I know it's a difficult situation as well. I just curious, I know it's the COVID at that time, but did you happen to know if when you communicate with your mom, did your mom stating anything, indicating anything regarding to her health condition as well? If she have gone, because you mentioned that she have gone to the hospital and have called for paramedics and so on. So I'm just want to get more detail of, like, what entail, and what have, if your mom have seen any, if she have gone to the hospital, if she have seen any ER doctor and so forth. I just want to get more detail on that.
Yeah, the timing of those things came probably beginning about, when did Dr. Morris, what was the date of his visit?
December 20th.
December 20th. So, yeah, so those incidents with the with paramedics and hospitals, that all started, and I'm just going from memory here, I don't have the records, but I would say that started about the third week of January. Maybe the fourth week of January.
Did she go to the ER and discharge her on the same day? Did you get any of the information from those visits that she had as well?
I think they were focusing on the cardiac issues as well. And there was, I think they did recommend to her to get some imaging work done. I get a CAT scan.
Okay, and are we talking the ER doctor, the hospitalist, or what are we talking about?
You're reaching for more detail than I've got at my fingertips. We would have to talk with her husband. I know sometime in January they were pushing her to get a CAT scan in late January because I think they probably suspected there were some things that showed up on her blood work that were problematic as well from when she went to the hospital. And they wanted a CAT scan. She wouldn't do the CAT scan. She was terrified of it. She was very afraid of radiation. So by the time she finally agreed to that in March, it was you know, very, very advanced.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Terry, hi, Dr. Sadler. And sorry for the loss. What would you have? I think you've answered the question, but let me just ask you. When she had the visit with Dr. Morris, what would you have expected? I understand maybe by that phase she was fairly down the line, but what would you have expected Dr. Morris to do that he did not do?
I would expect him to tell her that she needs to get a diagnostic workup on the lung.
Okay. And she obviously didn't proceed with any until she went to look like Banner in March.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
I think at that point she was, you know, probably scared and realized there was more to it than what she realized or was willing to admit to. And so she finally conceded. But it was, you know, at that point it was too late. She had one of those treatments where they, give her injections to block the estrogen. But that's as far as it ever got. About 8 or 10 days later, she was dead.
Okay.
So.
And she wasn't feeling well for, would you say, COVID was difficult to tell, but would you say for approximately a year?
Oh, no, no. I saw her last, July when my brother died.
Right.
And she seemed fine at that point to me.
Okay.
Now, in retrospect, maybe she had lost a few pounds. I noticed that in the photographs now. It looks like maybe she had lost a few pounds in July. So it's possible, but it's nothing that jumped out at me at the time. The first hint that I had that something was going on was, it was in late November, and she had, a little car accident, which I didn't think too much of at the time. And then she had that fall in Sprouts, where she, I don't know if she passed out or what exactly, but she fell and hit her head, and that certainly kind of jumped out that there was something going on. But I mean, I agree with Dr. Morris in the sense that your first thought would be, cardiac. Absolutely. I mean, there could be other things too that would cause something like that, but with the swelling in the feet, that seems pretty obvious. But there's a lot of things that can, you don't need me to tell you. There's lots of things that can lead into those sorts of issues. In this case, it was probably the cancer spreading, if I had guessed, but what was going on there. Because if you look at the CAT scans, it's pretty much everywhere in mid-March.
Is there, in reference to Dr. Morris today, what would you like the board, how would you like the board to proceed with this?
Well, I don't know that that's my, I don't know that that's my, my place to really have much to say about that. You know, you understand what the standards of practice are for a naturopathic physician better than I do, but it just seems to me that those are not the kinds of comments that a doctor should be making to a patient. That, well, I don't think you have cancer, and put their mind at ease, when it turns out that's exactly what she had, and almost certainly what led to her death. So, you know, I think the standard of practice should be that, oh, you have a lump. Well, we need to do some investigation. Let's do some sort of diagnostic thing, especially since you're not feeling well. There's appear to be some other things going on here. Let's get some diagnostic work done. And my gut feeling is as afraid as she was of radiation and things of that nature, I think, you know, if Dr. Morris would have said to her, you know, I really think you should get this looked at, I think she would have done it, because she had a lot of respect for Dr. Morris. And in fairness to Dr. Moore, he had helped keep her in pretty good, well-preserved condition for a woman of her age for many years. But I, in this case, I don't think it's appropriate. I think, you know, if a woman has a lump in her breast, me and my wife has had lumps in her breast, and on every occasion, the doctor has asked for additional diagnostic workup to be done. That seems to me that should be the standard of practice. This notion that, well, if not something is attached to the chest wall, I don't see how that can, you know, well, it certainly didn't work this time. I mean, did it? You know, it was completely disconnected from reality. So, yeah, that's what I would say. If a patient has a lump, it needs to be investigated instead of reassuring the person that everything's okay. I don't think that's appropriate.
Thank you, Terry. Anything else you'd like to add before we go back?
No, I don't. I don't really have anything else to say. I think that covers it.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, before I continue, let me digress down to the additional information with Dr. Spatt.
This is the spot on. I don't have any to add to this point.
And let me go up to Dr. Campbell.
Nothing else either.
Ms. Gallen?
Nothing to add.
Okay. Then let me go to Ms. Tippett.
I don't have any further questions.
And then I'll move up to Dr. O'Peel.
I don't have any additional questions right now either.
Okay. And, you know, Dr. Morris, I've known you probably 30 years. We're both in the same town. But, you know, my concerns that I see where this could have gotten somewhat off the main beaten path, but we were focused on the chief complaint, which obviously was cardiology at that point. My preference would have been that you would have also said, you know, this cardiology, definitely go see Dr. Goldberg. I'll help pave the way. But I would have felt a lot better about this if you would have also said, and that lump I'm not happy about, and I need to get that looked at, either go here or go here. And then give her a written format to follow for those, because the patient did trust you. And I don't know how often this happens, but that's my concern, is if a patient comes in, yes, and then they come in initially for visual and they deviate to a toe, that you at least give them some type of roadmap. And unfortunately, she came from another practitioner that may have made an impact or may not have. We'll need to look at that. But that's, you know, in terms of where I'm coming from. It would have been a lot cleaner, and it's obviously hindsight. It can happen to anybody, that you would have said, these two things I'm focusing on, and here's what we're going to do. Write them down, give them to her along with your integrative, you know, medical plan.
So, Dr. I feel like I gave her a crystal clear roadmap. I gave her a roadmap to the cardiologist, and I gave her a roadmap to monitor the breast lump. And in retrospect, I feel badly, and I'm saddened that, you know, I didn't say, you know, insist on something else. Again, I want to reiterate, if she trusted me so much, she didn't follow up with any cardiology that I recommended, and I don't know that she followed up with anyone at all until she was, you know, in a very bad position. I mean, if she would have come back to me, I can assure you and the board members that I would have made an additional referral. And so, and I'd like clarity from the board. Are we saying that the standard of care in naturopathic medicine directed by you, the medical board of this profession, that if a woman comes in with a lump of any kind, she should automatically be referred for an upgraded evaluation. I mean, that's news to me. If that's a very, very, very conservative position. If I'm more than willing to comply with that, if that's the way everybody feels it needs to be done. As I want to, you know, remind the board that the number of incidents of women getting biopsies and mammograms that are unnecessary and uncalled for and being over-diagnosed, we know is a problem in medicine today. And as naturopaths, I think we have a certain amount of natural bias to be conservative, but use good medical reference points. And I'm just interested in a comment from anyone else on the board about, you know, the complaint is, you know, saying that this issue about adherence to the chest wall or not. I mean, when I was in medical school and in my training since then, I understand that's not an absolute guideline, but it is a rational reference point. And that if it had been adherent, I would have insisted on a referral, but because it wasn't, I felt it was an appropriate step. I mean, am I out of line? Is that not true? Please help me.
I can only give you my opinion, and my opinion would have been to tackle both. You did with cardiology, and then the breast, when in doubt, whether it's fibrocystic, whether it's lymphatic, whatever it happens to be, I think you're going to never really err on the side of saying, I don't know what it is, I'm not quite certain, it could be A, B, C, or D, so let me get some type of image, I'll send you out, or I'll refer you to so-and-so, and then just escort that to make sure, you know, that happens, as you did with Goldberg. You did follow up, you did find out from their office that the patient had not gone there. But I would have felt better with this case if that would have also transpired with the press. Unfortunately, this had been going on for a long time, you know, prior to her being here. But that's my opinion, and I'll take it back to the other physician members, you know, how they feel that it should have been handled. So if I don't mind, Dr. Spack, can I start with you?
Yes, yeah, sure. Yeah, Dr. Morris, you know, I hear you about your year of experience and so forth, but for me, even though I do, my focus more is on pain management, but whenever a patient comes in, if anything suspicious, I always refer a patient out just to double check to make sure, because I know some of those are not my expertise, but so that's my opinion as well. I know that she did come in, this particular case, she did come in with a chief complaint which you addressed, but also on your chart note, you did express that the patient was breast lump. And so for me, you know, I would feel safer. I concur with Dr. Salek that I would have either ordered ultrasound or refer to a specialist as well. But I know that in this particular case, you did address what the chief complaint with this particular patient coming in. But I know that now it's too late. Now it's in hindsight. But definitely in the future, I would highly recommend you to do that. If we don't know, then why not refer to a specialist?
I hear and respect that. I mean, it's a very conservative approach. And I'm more than willing and happy to comply. And in this case, I'm very sad. But I hear your message loud and clear.
Yeah, and that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Campbell, can I roll up to you on this?
No. And on this one, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Gallen?
I'm still thinking about it.
Okay. Ms. Tibbetts?
I tend to appreciate a doctor like Dr. Morris that does take a conservative approach as someone who's had very aggressive testing taken unnecessarily. I think that his perspective was to address what was critical and most pertinent in the moment with reference to if there's any changes, any more concerns. It just feels like if that's persistent after we address this, if that's persistent, you know, let's take a look at it. I personally appreciate how he handled this. I'm not a physician. I understand the need to, you know, cover the bases and do all those things, but I do believe that some things are done unnecessarily out of fear of, I don't know. I just appreciate his approach on this. I don't have a medical opinion.
Okay. Dr. Sophia?
I'm torn, I guess. I think if they, I appreciate what Karen just said about the conservative approach. I think given that it was one visit and the recommendation was to follow up with any changes, the expectation would be, okay, if we're losing weight, if we're seeing issues, if you're feeling worse, et cetera, that the expectation would be that the patient sheet's going to come back and we can do the appropriate testing from there. I think in today's day and age that unfortunately you probably have to assume the worst until proven otherwise, and, you know, trying to recommend a $100 ultrasound or starting some diagnostic imaging is probably not a bad idea in a patient this age as well. So I know I'm saying both sides of the fence here, but I understand. I think you did an absolutely adequate job addressing the most chief concern of that day and that time. And you did recommend repeated follow-up if anything changes. I think you probably should probably just assume that, you know, yes, conservative care is appreciated in the most situations, but, you know, at least probably writing that referral and letting the patient decide, and maybe just further, like, hey, I want to see you in 2 weeks. I want to follow up with this. I know you were referring for cardiology, but maybe some sort of expected follow-up, like, I want to see you in a month, period, you know. So, unfortunately, I understand both perspectives on this. I don't think you did the wrong thing, but I guess you could have done more proactive based on, you know, the perspectives of Dr. Saddle and Dr. Spatz. So, that's all I have to say, I guess, today.
I agree with what you're saying, Dr. Papil, and what Dr. Spatz saying. Where I'm torn on this is what would have been nice, it would have made a lot of difference. Really no way to tell. Most likely, unfortunately, this was fairly advanced. However, I just want to make sure, and I'm sure the board does too, that if a patient presents with any type of suspicion, yes, you may want to take a conservative approach and wait, see, et cetera. But that patient should also have the option given to them that right now I can offer you these two options, imaging, various types, as we all know, and or come back and see me, you know, in a month, or I'm going to refer you to somebody who's more equipped to handle it. That's where I'm at. Is basically that it's really clear and understood that these are your options. This is the possible outcome of if you don't do this, this may be this, this may be that. And that unfortunately happened somewhat, but it wasn't driven home enough. So that physician members and public members, that's where I'm at with this. And I've known Dr. Morris, not as though I've never met him. I've known each other a long time. So it's also on my mind too. But I just need to make sure, and I'm sure the board does too, that this does not happen again, that the patient's given the alternative.
alternative, and if necessary, the referral slip for imaging. If they proceed, great. If they don't, they don't. So that's where I'm at.
Dr. Savitz, are you of the opinion that kind of a letter of concern is necessary, or?
Probably,
or
a
more
letter of
dismissal?
No, I'm thinking a letter of concern, so, and I, again, I know Dr. Morris, and I know he clinically, you know, that in general, he shows the best he can, and always has, probably always will. And I think, unfortunately, this whole incident happened. And a letter of concern is fine. I just don't want it to happen again. And I think he gets the point. I think as board members, as physician board members, we all get the point too, because this can happen to any of us that get sidetracked from a patient coming in with a headache to, again, a toenail. And then which direction are we heading? So it's kind of one of those, I guess, the CYA thing is, these are your three options, and it could be this or that, but I'll give you those options written, and here's the referral slip if you choose to, you know, execute it. That's my long distance about the field.
That's fine. I understand. Absolutely. I think that's a fair approach of, you know, for a letter of concern for, I guess, failure to refer or, you know, maybe just a letter of concern in general for this case. And I understand your perspective.
So let's go ahead then. We'll do a letter of concern. I don't know. I'll ask Ms. Anthony if we need, or Mr. Larson, whether we need to tag it with a specific or whether we can just make it a general letter of concern.
Yes, the board should outline what the concerns, what the board's specific concerns are that should be addressed in the letter of concern on the record.
And since I made the motion, I'd say failure to refer and I would just go with failure to refer for diagnostic workup.
This is Dr. Popiel. I second that motion.
Yeah, whenever you want, do roll call.
Dr. Sadler?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
No.
Would you like to explain your vote?
I don't have a concern.
Okay.
I just feel that it was, the other was so much more a crisis, and I feel it's in a different category than assessing headache to toenail, where you're looking at all kinds of things. I felt there wasn't a very immediate thing, and that was addressed. And the other could have been addressed as a follow-up. So I'm not concerned, so I don't want to vote yes for a letter of concern.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
And Dr. Rubin is absent. Motion carries.
Thank you, Dr. Morris.
Dr. Sadler, could we take?
I appreciate it. I understand my responsibility for the future.
Thank you, Ms. Anthony. You were saying something.
Dr. Sadler, could we take a couple minute break?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
How long do you need?
Just a couple minutes. Oh. Maybe 2 minutes.
Okay. I have 3:11. Let's reconvene at